حناني وإن أذنبت رجاني وإن أدبرت ناداني وإن أقبلت أدناني وإن أحببت والاني وإن أخلاني.
Salam alaikum. Welcome again to another program. Today we want to talk about Islam and is it oppressive to women? We have Sheikh Ahmed Hanif with us again today. Salaam alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salaam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So tell us, Sheikh Hanif, what is oppression?
That's a good question. It's a good question to start with because I think that oppression has two aspects to it. And they can be separated. One oppression is objective oppression. Right? And what is objective oppression? Oppression is any action, whether self-inflicted or inflicted by others, that prevents a being. Mm-hmm. I'd rather say a being. In this case, a human being, for example, but any being, okay, any living being, from realizing its potential. This is oppression. Okay? So if you deprive light from a plant, okay, with the intention of not wanting it to grow for some negative reason, this is oppression. If you withhold food from an animal, this is oppression. If you deny a child the right to education, for example, this is oppression. So oppression is any action that is against the another thing reaching its rightful potential. This is objective oppression. Then you have a subjective aspect to oppression, where people feel themselves oppressed. And this may or may not conform with the idea of true objective oppression, where a person attaches a value to a particular action or state and see that them being prevented from carrying out that action or enjoying that state as a state of oppression. So somebody could probably feel, for example, I am being deprived of an education, you know, by somebody else, I'm being oppressed, which is true. Or they might feel, for example, I'm being deprived from going to the pub, and therefore I'm oppressed. Okay, which is a false one, but they would feel this particular way.
Why is it false?
Well, because, I mean, going to the pub and drinking alcohol mm-hmm. is something, first of all, is dangerous for your health.
Okay.
You see? And secondly, it leads to a lot of negative social consequences. The only positive thing that people get out of alcohol drinking is a temporary pleasure in the drinking itself, right? And in the socialization that goes along with it. But the other objective factors outweigh this. And because of this, Allah has outlawed it.
Okay. Now, so why is there this hype then about Islam as an oppressive religion, as being oppressive to women? Why does this topic always come up?
And I think that this comes up because of the subjective understanding or a subjective approach to oppression. Yeah. First of all, I think in Western societies, you know, contemporary Western societies are very hostile to religion, okay, to social religion. They're not as hostile to personal religion. You know, you can declare to be a Muslim in your personal life. They have no problem with this. It is when you overstep and go into the social realm that you are now considered to be an example of backwardness. You're now considered to be an agent against progress and so forth. For example, the hijab, right? The hijab is taking Islam into the public sphere, you know, because now you decide to dress religiously, and because you dress religiously, it has an impact upon society. One of the most important elements in social influence is how you dress, you see. Then also, you find that modern society is very critical and suspicious of social relationships based on religion. It would much prefer, for example...
What do you mean?
For example, marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It would prefer marriage to be a civil type of marriage. You have people who go to church to get married. All right? But the church is very much like a studio. Okay? It makes a good photo op.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It provides... a very nice background, like a movie, with the pomp and the
ceremony,
and mm-hmm. so forth and so on, right? But they don't believe in it, okay? They don't believe in it, right? It's a romantic idea, you know. Just like, for example, you know, if you hold hands and you walk on the side of the beach, you know, you will be in a romantic environment
with the sunset.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Okay? It's one of that those types of ideas.
Okay.
The church doesn't have a role there. Okay? To base your relationship, your marital relationship, on religious precepts is, again, allowing religion to come into social life, and so people tend to think that this is oppressive. Now, Western society has had its experience, it's negative experience with religion, like what Muslim society is experiencing right now, okay, with fundamentalisms, with the violence that comes along with it, okay, the hatred, the intolerance, and so forth and so on, okay, and this led to many, many wars between Western countries. Their response was to go secular. Their response was a very traumatic response. They still remember this historically. And they elected to embrace secularism or non-religiosity as the only means whereby you can have confessional peace. And so Western societies tend to look at the social expression of religion, where religion insists upon impacting upon the social sphere, they tend to look upon that with great suspicion.
Okay, are there oppressive Muslim societies?
Oh yes, I think there are. I think there are oppressive Muslim societies. I would doubt if these societies objectively think of them as being oppressive, themselves as being oppressive.
So how are they oppressive?
But they are oppressive relationships. Again, this idea of subjective oppression,
mm-hmm.
okay, also includes being oppressed, but subjectively thinking that you're not oppressed.
Okay, you need to explain that.
For example, if I think that, let's say, having a bank account is good,
mm-hmm.
even though having a bank account benefits the banker at my expense, I would think that I'm not being oppressed. Athletes of today, for example, they are commodities by the in terms of their teams. They're owned by their teams. Okay, almost like slaves.
Okay, so you're dealing with Islam with oppression as being subjective.
As being subjective, but in this case, people being oppressed, but not seeing themselves as being oppressed on a subjective level. Okay, and a very good example would be female circumcision.
All right, let's stop there.
Yeah.
We're going to come back. You stay with us or take a look at this segment, and we'll be right back.
I think we have to, because in this multicultural society where we are living, and where each poster they hanged with the aim of to demolish the identity of the religions, and they actually spreading the message, the religion is the actual difficulty of the human being. So with this challenge, we have to celebrate, because all the things you can see around, especially in Western, everything, what they are doing, what they are spreading through media, through papers, everything, the aim behind is that don't follow any religion, because religion is the difficulty of yourself. So if you need to come out from difficulties, so don't follow the religion. So if we need to be stay with religion, with identity, with our people, we have to give our time with these events, especially for next generation. If we need to save them, to stay them with the Mawaddate Muhammad Al Muhammad, we have to be celebrate, we have to be these type of events, like celebration of birthday and any celebrations. Religious events is most important for our next generation. Only name of Zahra, she said the Tasbih Fatma Zahra is the key of the difficulties. So whoever pray, recite it, or read his namaz, sit calmly, and if follow the rule of that Tasbih Fatma Zahra, can be get out from the difficulties. And so there is lots of things, her teachings, her practices, her simplicity, being a wife, she's really great lady, because that's why her father said, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, ya Fatima anti umma abiha, you are the mother of father. This is a great example.
Welcome back. We're here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif. Now, Sheikh, I want to know from you, are Muslim societies oppressive?
I can't say all Muslim societies are oppressive. There are some oppressive Muslim societies, yes. Not necessarily in all aspects, but in one aspect or the other, definitely.
How are they oppressive to women?
Okay, for example, you have some Muslim societies that deny education to young girls. Mm-hmm. They might say, for example, you know, all that is important for them to learn is Quran.
Okay.
This is oppressive, because it is not about them giving them the opportunity to develop their intellectual capabilities.
Are they against women learning, or are they against women learning in a Western style of education?
Well, it usually begins as being against women learning Western style education. The thing is, they do not make any effort to create a non-Western style education for both for girls and boys. And they allow boys to go through this Western style education. Mm-hmm. You see? So it, again, it's still oppressive to women because it's still denying them an opportunity for intellectual development.
I see. Okay, there is that aspect of education. Are there any other aspects?
I think so. I think you would find, for example, in marriage, you would find that you have some societies that restrict a woman's choice of spouse to whatever the family chooses.
Okay. That's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Of course, they're all cultural things. They're all cultural things. Because Islam is not oppressive to women, you know, but Muslims are oppressive to women. Muslim men are oppressive to women. Yeah. You know, so yeah, they're all cultural things, but they do exist.
Okay, now, so why do we always have this? We always say things like, Islam is not this, but Muslims are this way.
Right.
Why is it that we always have this sort of like confusion? Why is it that Islam is so pure and everything is so wonderful in Islam, yet we see Muslims who are supposed to be practicing Islam doing, you know, being oppressive and being barbaric and being the worst of mankind, it seems.
I think it's because we say this because it's clear, right? We say this because it's clear. I mean, what defines a Muslim is Islam. You know, person says, I'm a Muslim. What does it mean? I'm following Islam.
Okay.
So somebody now, if one sees some questionable activity on the part of a Muslim, would say, okay, does Islam condone this? And so you have to go back to Islam, the teachings of Islam, and see what Islam says about that.
So what happened to Muslims along the way that they're always doing something questionable and oppressive?
They're not always, right? But you find this type of thing happening. And I think that one of the reasons is that, you know, they're not very properly educated about Islam.
Okay.
For example, some of those places that you've, most of the places that you find really horrible things being done to women, okay, are being done to women in tribal type of societies that are on the fringes, you know, of a country, you know, rather than central. You'd find, for example, a different, more advanced, more compassionate or cooperative type of relationship existing between women and men in urban centers, for example, in the Muslim societies, where you have more education, you know, where you have a deeper understanding of Islam and so forth, than in, for example, a village, where the level of education and literacy is low.
Okay, fine. But, okay, we have a country like Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
All right. Lots of oil, very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good relations with Western countries. Mm-hmm. All right. Women can't drive cars.
Right.
Women can't go out without some kind of chaperone.
Yes.
You know, just two women the other day were able to take part in the Olympic Games. You know, women can't ride bicycles freely or now getting some kind of right to do that. What about that?
Yes.
What about these taking away these rights of women?
Well, what you find in a place like Saudi Arabia is that the sophistication and depth of Islamic teachings have not been on par with the sophistication and depth of Western education in that country. You see, and what you find that is that that country has a very superficial and intellectually stultifying approach to Islamic studies and to Islamic teachings. And because of this, they tend to be very, very superficial. The result is this, you know, it is basically a puritanical fundamentalist type of a state.
Okay. Now, Muslim societies generally are not like Western societies in the sense that in Western societies, you find that women are, should I use the word, free.
Mm-hmm.
Women can do all these things. They can ride bicycles, they can drive cars and, you know, do a lot of things. But in Western, in Muslim societies, there are restrictions in all of them,
yes.
I would say, in all Western, in Muslim societies, there are restrictions on what women can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from, these restrictions? What is behind that?
I think there are some restrictions that are true, that are mm-hmm. real, and are rooted in Islam, definitely.
Okay.
And there are some really restrictions that are perceived, or really restrictions that are imagined that should be imposed upon
Can you
women.
Give us some examples of these?
An example of a restriction that is rooted in Islam, for example, is the restriction on women to be rulers, or to be judges, or to be members of the armed forces. You know, you might have some flexibility on the area, in the area of the armed forces. Women could provide supportive roles in some militaries.
We're talking about Muslim society.
Muslim society.
Why can't women join, be on the front lines in combat?
I'm just asking.
Yeah.
I think it is because, again, Islamic society is organized on the basis of metaphysics, of the divine names. Women are the manifestation of Allah's creator, Allah's nurturer. Okay, women are the ones who bring life into the world. They're the nurturers of life. And therefore, women to take the role as takers of life is something that violates the metaphysical principles of society. And this is why men are allowed to do that, but not women, in normal circumstances. Because if the enemy breaches the walls and are now about to invade the city, Muslim women should take up arms, for example, to defend themselves. But outside of that extreme case, the role of soldier, which is like the taker of life, is something that is inappropriate for women as givers and bringers of life into the world. Judge, for example, again, requires a certain level of remoteness and impartiality and coldness that is, again, against the nurturative intimacy and love that embodies women. Now, we're talking about symbolic things here. We're not talking about whether women are like this or like that. You see, we're mm-hmm. talking about symbolic things. And to a large extent, women tend to be like this. Mm-hmm. All right? But it does not mean, I do not accept the idea that women, for example, cannot rule. Women can rule. You see?
You mean they have the potential to rule.
They have
rule.
The potential to rule.
Okay.
Okay? And they might be able to rule just as good as a man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But it is because we want the society to be organized along the lines of the divine names being manifest in society, in terms of our roles, that these restrictions take place. The problem is, what happens with some men's mindset is they start thinking women can't do this.
Okay.
You see? And women are not intelligent enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And it leads to a negative understanding about women.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to take a break. Stay with us.
I'm coming here to dua, pray, and help people in need and give money to charity, donations.
Do you read Quran every day?
Mostly every 2-3 days, and maybe read a page or two. Not really a lot.
How did you learn Quran?
Well, I came to the classes in here, Islamic Center of England, and I went here for 2 years.
Who encouraged you? Who did encourage you to come to learn Quran?
I just found out, so I just went because I love to learn it. Now I knew a little bit about it, not really good.
How did you find that?
Well, I found out from the reception. They told me there was a Quran lessons going on. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you memorizing Quran?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I'm memorizing some surah as well. Yeah.
What ayah or surah have you memorized?
I think I forgot them, but still, I think I remember one from the Isnas. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل هو الله احد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا احد.
Hello, my name is Neda. I'm 10 years old and I have one brother and one sister. And I have learned a quarter of the Quran and I'm going to recite Al-Qara'a. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم القارعة ما القارعة وما أدراك ما القارعة يوم يكون الناس كالفراش المبثوث وتكون الجبال كالإحن المنفوش وأما من ثقلت موازينه فهو في عيشة راضية وأما من خفت موازينه فأمه هاوية ما أدراك ما هي نار حامية
تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويشد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا أقرب تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويشد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا أطرب تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويشد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا أطرب.
Welcome back. We are here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif and we are talking about Muslim Islam as being oppressive to women. Now, you said that some of these oppressive attitudes are rooted in Islam and some are not rooted in Islam. Can you talk about the ones that are not rooted in Islam?
Well, for one example that comes to my mind is the attitude that women are not smart. Okay, women are not smart, or women are not as smart as men. Okay, that women are, to some extent, foolish. This is not rooted in Islam. Because Islam, you have, for example, a hadith of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, where he states quite explicitly, okay, that it is the duty of Muslim men and Muslim women to seek knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He didn't say just Muslim men. You see? So this is one aspect. And so this leads to, for example, restricting them from school, you know, and saying that, you know, stereotyping their social behavior, you know, their social opportunities, that all they can do is make babies and stay home and cook, you know. So you have this basic stereotype. Then you have, for example, restrictions on women traveling, okay? Restrictions on women traveling, and freedom of movement, okay? And that women being accompanied by chaperones being something mustahab, okay? And not wajib, okay? Being something recommended but not obligatory. So you have that, and I think this also leads to the idea of restrictions on women on driving cars, you know. And, you know, yeah, there are many, many of them like this, okay. And, you know, I think these two are where a lot of these other restrictions circle around. You have the stereotype that women are... sexual devils, you know what I mean, like that need to be controlled, You know, you have that type of thing as well. And all of these things, I think it is very important for Muslim societies to sort of work against.
Okay. Now, all of these ideas that Islam is an oppressive religion and so on, is there an agenda, do you think, behind this?
Oh, yes. I think from the Western point of view, there is an agenda. Okay. For one thing, there is a phenomenal growth of Islam in the West. Four out of every five conversions to Islam in the West are of women.
Why do you think women are turning to Islam if Islam is a religion such as this?
That is so very, oppressive. Very surprising, because in light of the immense propaganda against Islam, especially mm-hmm. In its fictional depiction of Islam's oppressive relationships with women, women are becoming Muslim. And I think one of the reasons is because of the fact that Islam is something that appeals to women's fitra. It appeals to their inner primordial nature. Okay? Women deep down appreciate the idea of the male as provider. They appreciate the idea of being respected in their homes and in their societies. They appreciate the idea of not being seen as a sexual object, you know, the putting on of hijab, okay? They appreciate the idea that motherhood is something that is exalted, that should be, you know, people should strive towards, you see? Where they live in a society where motherhood is seen as an impediment to progress, for example.
A setback to your career.
A setback to your career, right? They appreciate all of this, you see? And I think when they are in contact with an enlightened Muslim or enlightened Muslim families that are not trapped by all these negative stereotypes about women and so forth and so on, it becomes very easy for them to gravitate towards Islam.
Are there oppressive attitudes towards women in non-Muslim societies?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, you read the newspapers every day, you know, about oppressive attitudes towards women. You know, seeing women exclusively as sex objects, levels of rape being high in Western societies. Even in their economic activity, even when they pay lip service to the fact that there should be equal employment between the genders, women's pay tend to be much lower on the average than that of men for the same jobs, you know.
What about fashion?
Again, fashion is a very, very important area in clothing where women are encouraged to dress sexily instead of beautifully, instead of aesthetically. And so you find the clothing being developed along lines of showing a woman's form, you know, exposing more and more of her body, you see. And at the same time, they're talking about men shouldn't be sexist and they shouldn't be looking at women as sexual objects and so forth.
So do women contribute to their oppression?
I think they do. Mm-hmm. To be sure, I think they do. And it goes back to that subjective aspect of oppression where you feel that a certain oppressive act is not oppressive mm-hmm. because you're encouraged to like it and to welcome it when in fact it is. Because when a woman dresses in a sexually enticing way, she is restricting the view of people, of men towards her, that would result in her being suppressed, in her ambitions not being met. You know, there was some scientific studies that showed how women how men look at women in different states of undress, right, in bikinis and so on, that when men, males, male subjects, were exposed to female images in different stages of undress, the part of the brain that showed the most activity was that part of the brain that was associated with the use of objects. So in other words, the men were seeing the women in an objectified fashion. This in itself is the epitome of oppression, in the sense that when another human being sees another, one human being sees another human being as an object, it means that that person's value, social value, diminishes, and their progress or development can be restricted by the society that sees that person on that limited level. But you find women who, you know, embrace this type of thing. They think of it as empowering, especially because they can see it as having an effect upon men that is very flattering for them, you know.
Makes them feel powerful.
It makes them feel powerful, when in fact it is something that actually disempowers them, you know. And so here we have a classic case of a subjective understanding, a subjective view of oppression that does not see it as oppression.
Okay. What is the enlightened Muslim's response, therefore, to oppression?
Well, you know, it's very interesting that one of, in the Holy Prophet's last sermon to the Muslims, mm-hmm. he emphasized among some key issues, he emphasized there that they should be careful about their relationships with women, you know.
In what sense?
He didn't really specify the context, but the by virtue of the fact that he had mentioned that, you know, indicates that Muslims should be very careful with respect to their women. The enlightened Muslim's approach then is one where it is his duty to keep that in mind and to be always cognizant of maintaining women's rights. I think one of the things that the Muslim should do is to be able to study Islam to greater depth and look in the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, the Sunnah of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, to look at the status of women in the time of Medina, you know, and early Muslim civilizations even, you know, to get a better idea of the exalted status of women in Muslim society. I think this is very important. I think it is very important for that person that whenever they see in their own personal relations instances where Muslim women are being oppressed, that they should speak out and they should try to change things.
Okay. Thank you very much. We've been talking to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif about the oppression of women in Islam. Is Islam oppressive to women? We thank you very much for sharing your views with us, Sheikh Ahmed, and we thank you for watching our program. And please join us for another program coming soon. Bye for now.